What's happening, and welcome in. It is time for a Waffle Mafia podcast again. What's up, bros? Vic, what's happening, my friend? It is story time. We're going to get back up in it again. So good to see you guys. It's been a minute since we got to hang out. What's up, Robert Fletcher? What's going on, my friend? Of course, Waffle Mafia podcast. This is your place for a weekly waffle wrap-up, a rundown of everything that's going on in the He-Man community. And, of course, what's happening within the Waffle Mafia itself. Well, pause for the calls, and we'll get some stuff off the shelf here. We're going to talk about a couple of things. Talk a little bit about Hordak. Going to do a character discussion about him. Talk about the waffles for this week. And a couple other things are going on in the Masters community. What's up, Monroe? What's going on, my friend? Pause for the calls. Don't want to let myself down. I figured since John went with a different camera angle, I would try that also. That way I could be up here and I can actually see what you guys are saying. And we can have a conversation that way. So, yeah, we'll do a little pausing for the calls. And what's up, Joito? What's happening, my friend? Cristobal Dabila, all back up in it again. So, the week's been pretty good. We've had a lot going on. What's up, Ruth? What's happening? So we started off with, of course, Sunday being the first day of the week. Joito Josue down at La Wheel got the Waffle Mafia on the roll, doing his thing down there. We then come up with a Manet Monday. So you guys were wanting to do a Maple Monday. T-Pumper was off of work, so a shout out to T-Pumper. Hadn't got to jump in a while. What's up, Ruth? What's happening, Squirrel? What's up, AK? Alexander Kent is in the house. Big Stevie Magnus. What's up, my dude? Yeah, man. So, like I said, Law Will got us started this week. Doing his thing down there, our brother from another mother. And then a Man at Monday. So we did a Man at Monday. Then we did a Night with the King on Tuesday. And so, man, it's just really been a ramped up waffle week. We've had a whole lot going on. John did his thing over at Most Powerful Waffles, John and Cassandra. If you guys didn't see that, check the replay. That's pretty awesome. Of course, John also does his podcast that I'm also part of, but I just really haven't gotten a chance. Mondays are ridiculous. It's been very hard to get to sit down with you guys anyway. You know, more than the Thursday and Saturday that we do already. What's up, Mandingo Dine? What's happening, my dude? It's just been tough to make Wednesdays work for whatever reason. So I thought maybe if we move the time back on Wednesday and we just did a late one on Wednesday, I'd wait until we got the baby in the bed and then we get together and rack our heads and talk a little bit of Motu. But so Johnny did his thing over at Most Powerful Waffles also there on Tuesday. Carbalka would normally be our saving grace for a Wednesday, but you know, we left this slot open tonight to come and talk to you guys and do the podcast, and then we'll be back tomorrow night for Thirsty Thursday. So Thirsty Thursday, what did we do last week? Let's do our weekly waffle wrap-up. Well, last week for Thirsty Thursday, we actually did Toys for Tots. So with Toys for Tots, that took the place of our normal Thirsty Thursday, and we gave away all the Tots stuff. So that was pretty awesome. $1,000 again raised for Toys for Tots. We did that last week. All of that stuff is shipping out in the morning. I actually had most of it ready to go today, and this damn thing called work gets in the way. So I ended up having to do a little bit of work today and actually did not make it to the post office or actually even back to the office, to be quite honest. But that's okay. Tomorrow morning, jump on it early. Going to get down to the post office, get that stuff sent out. That will also go out with everything from Syrupy Saturday and Manet Monday. So we've got the Thirsty Thursday, which was the all the stuff that we did in conjunction with Scareglow's house. to do the giveaway. And if you guys are not a part of Scare Glow's house, go over there and check that out. That's where the Toys for Tots rally got started this year. We were rallying the crowd to get things going. He reached out to us. In the Waffle Mafia, we've pulled two. We're about to pull number three. So that one's going to go over to Johnny and Cassandra for me. What's up, D. Brown? What's happening? And, of course, Scare Glow himself is also going to send some stuff over there, Mr. John Itis. So, John donating some things. I'm donating some things. Miz and Cassandra will actually do the next set of waffles. So, they're going to do that for our Toys for Tots drive. And, of course, that's in conjunction with Scare Glow's house and everything that Mr. Itis has got going over there. Little pause for the calls. The God Wafflers in the room. We good sir, always have a drink to you. So there it is, and there's what it be. And that is time for some station identification from the Bay of He. So MPA, he-bay.com. If you don't know, ask your mom. Obviously, she drinks, so she's cool with my book. Hey man, it's just apple cider. You don't have to look. Hey, what's up? Joe Ito's talking to the God Waffler, D. Brown, Sweeney up in the house. So, I totally lost my place when I was running my mouth. Yeah, we were doing the weekly waffle wrap-up, so we talked about everything there. Of course, did the Toys for Tots rundown. Did Syrupy Saturday and a Manic Monday. So, wild weekend of waffles. That was a lot of fun. Of course, since we're talking about Hordak tonight, you guys know that he will be tomorrow night's bro. So we're going to talk about Hordak tonight, and then we'll get him on the griddle just right. So tomorrow night, we are going to do Super 7's new Hordak, the Filmation True beautiful looking addition to the line of Club Grayskull. So there is Hordak in all of his glory. He is mint in box. He's got Imp with him. Oh so beautiful, glorious figures. Of course, these, again, talked about the other night, come with the sleeve. So they do have the sleeve on the outside. But interestingly enough, Super 7 also gave us these killer mailers to go with these two. So they say He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and Super 7 Adult Collector. We did not get these with Club Grayskull before, but we do have them now. So that's pretty awesome. So we will be talking about old Hordak. What's up there, Waffle Queen? We'll be talking about old Hordak tomorrow night. He will be the focus of the show. And we got to talk about him for just a few minutes here tonight. Yo, so... oh, the Imp's beautiful, crystal ball. I like the art, the box, you know, the box artwork is very nice. Really beautifully done. And the one thing that I can say as far as this line goes, I don't particularly collect this line. I was kind of staying away from them. Oh, that's an interesting question. Sweeney, because that's something we'll talk about here in just a minute. But I just never, I don't know, I'm not a huge fan of the Filmation line. So with that said, it was kind of, it was easy for me to stay away from these, I think, until just recently, and I started getting these, and man, I tell you what, they are beautifully, beautifully done. So this Hordak really, really changed my mind. And to be honest, I mean, he literally looks like he is jumping right off of the page. If you get that up close look at him there, I mean, the camera just, I mean, it does not do him any kind of justice as far as how well he was captured. We got that other arm. He comes with that secondary arm there. And, of course, the Imp box. So that's pretty cool. Imp looks like the thing in a rough hand situation. That's funny. Filmation version equals not that cool to me. I mean, there are mixed opinions on the Filmation line. I think as far as what they are, and I've defended Super 7 on this before, just because I get the idea. I get it. This is what you're trying to do. It is a cartoon look. It is supposed to look like it simply is jumping out of the page or jumping out of the cartoon at you. and that they are doing well. The sort of dulled down, the matte finish, the easier, I guess, less detail of things in the Filmation line seems to be something that plays to Super 7's strong suit. So these figures are turning out really super nice, and it's one of the things that once I got to really looking at them, I thought, wow, man, you know, the detail and stuff, even though it's missing and you don't necessarily have as much detail, the things that are there are done so well that it, man, it really is super accurate. I mean, look at the bones around there, beautiful. A much more slender Hordak here than you see in any of the classics versions that we got. So, interestingly, I love this. I absolutely love this one. And may end up having to come back and pick this line up at a super high price because, you know, it is what it is and that ain't nice. But, guys, if you don't grab them while they're hot, they seem to be going, man. Yeah, they do look like cell art, like an art cell. Under the watchful eye of Horde Prime, Hordak rose through the ranks of evil Horde. He favored science over sorcery and soon gained the ability to transform his physical form into a plethora of offensive weaponry. Despite failing to overthrow Eternia, Hordak effortlessly conquered the planet of Etheria, but the appearance of She-Ra has seen Hordak's dominance of the planet stall. Yet in an endless army at his disposal, Hordak believes it's only a matter of time before the Princess of Power bows to him. So, in this particular telling here, it's just a little bit of a different bio, just a quick sort of blurb of what's going on there. And it's a little bit different than what we've gotten in the past with classics bios where they try to give the whole story, but beautiful, beautiful stuff by Super 7. Guys, I mean, I know a lot of people go Super 7 hating, man, but quality issues aside, I mean, truthfully, that is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in a box. I mean, it really is. So, we'll have a pause for the calls for old Hordak's claws and get that underway. Got a few things about Hordak to say, and I thought it was very interesting. A couple of the things that I learned about Hordak today when I was getting ready to talk to you guys. Of course, Hordak, ruthless leader of the evil Horde. What's up, Artemis Prime? What's happening, my dude? Two names for Hordak, which is very interesting. Of course, the name Hordak. We're not counting that one. But then we also got Hector Kerr, and then we also have Tyglar. So, or Tilgar, Tilgar, T-Y-L-G-A-R. So, Tilgar and Hector Kerr, Team Pitchforks in the room. Artemis Prime representing Team Pitchforks. There's been a lot of heartbreak over in the Waffle, in Waffle Land this past week. Team Pitchforks, of course, keeping up their dominance of the Waffle Mafia. And then, on top of that, Tina Bonahate, man, is just breaking hearts. His girl is just straight breaking hearts. Two times she's been in somebody's clutches. Two times she is simply evaded. Yeah, man, it's been so much fun this past week with you guys. But on back to Hordak. Affiliations, the evil Horde, monstrosities of weapons. And what I'm looking at tonight, of course, we're looking at the Character Guide and World Compendium. So there that is. With all the information in there for you. I dug a little deeper than that, but to be honest, most of the information that we had in here that was in the compendium this time, as far as with Hordak, the only piece I didn't really get into was the vintage toy, and maybe we'll cover that at a future time and just talk about the actual different pieces of the vintage toy and the concept art and how he's developed. But looking more in depth of a character, who is Hordak? Where does he come from? And I think it's interesting that they point out in the 83 mini comics that Hordak wasn't given a whole lot of backstory, other than the idea that, you know, he's a ruthless fella from another world who has come to put the hurt on Eternia. So, with that said, it depicted Hordak as a ruthless and power-hungry technomancer bent on universal domination. Combining science and sorcery, Hordak created monstrous creatures to do his bidding and commanded a massive army of Horde troopers. Though he used magic, generally Hordak favored technology. So what you will see is across all of the different canons when we talk about Hordak, he didn't necessarily do any sorcery type things, but he very much favored technology in place of those kind of things. A mini comic Hordak. Yeah, I like mini comic Hordak. I think he's awesome. Especially the way that he's depicted. 86 Marvel Star Comics. He has a very awesome look to him. But so Hordak always in favor of technology and didn't really like sorcery all that much. And I've always thought it was interesting that, you know, his right-hand man, so to speak, is Shadow Weaver. And with Shadow Weaver's sorcery and his technological thing advances, you know, they were sort of unstoppable. Of course, commanding the force of Horde troopers, the Horde troopers being more machine than monster, and you know, maybe the, I like the way that Eternity War sort of threw it out there that these were the souls of the people that Hordak had absorbed, and what was left was the crumpled shell of the person, and then he places them under his command as Horde troopers. So interesting there. That's always been consistent that Hordak was the leader of the evil Horde. He always made me think of Apocalypse from X-Men, his limb shifting and shit. Yeah, I agree. That's an interesting aspect of who he is. And to me, I don't know that that's technology as much as that is sorcery. If I just whip my arm out into a gun, I mean, I don't know. I guess the technological aspect behind it, I don't know. I thought that was kind of conflicting. In the mini comic Leech Power, the Master of Power Suction Unleashed, Hordak possessed the ability to grow to an enormous size. That's actually one of the few times throughout the canon that what he is able to do is sort of inconsistent. So there, for whatever reason, he's able to grow monstrous in size, but that doesn't carry on later on. Yeah, see, magic imbued tech. See, that's what I think. It's like they made it a point to say he's a technomancer. So I thought that was interesting, just the word that they chose, technomancer. So he's sort of, it's like technological sorcery, but he doesn't like sorcery. It's like you just kind of hate part of yourself, man. But, I mean, that is, I guess that's why they chose that, technomancer. So there you go. What I did think was interesting too is it mentions in 83 that his arm also transformed into a cannon which could fire a Thunderball Mace. Of course, we get that with Hurricane Hordak, where we actually have the pieces. They're sort of the mace pieces, and we have the spinning bat pieces. But it says, when Hordak entered the central tower, a terrible buzzsaw weapon formed that could burst from his chest and decimate anything in its path. That's when we ended up with Buzzsaw Hordak. Through his former pupil once betrayed him by, or though his former pupil once betrayed him by sealing the door between Eternity and Etheria, Hordak and Skeletor occasionally formed uneasy alliances against their foe. If you go across most of the history of Hordak and the telling of Hordak, they always seem to want to place him as, yeah, that was 100% necromancy. I'm going to get to that in just a second, because that's sort of the direction I'm going in with that, AK. The reason being, all throughout the whole history and the telling of Hordak, all of these things that he's doing and all these abilities and things that he is capable of, they are not only old technology, but they're sort of ancient magic. So it's pointed out that he was around during the time of the Central Towers, obviously, since the buzzsaw situation happens when the Central Towers come back at a later time. But it's actually very much pointed out early on that he had a hand in the creation of the Central Towers. So if Hordak was around and even had a hand in the creation of the Central Towers, you've got to understand that Hordak is a very ancient being. And in my mind, him being an ancient being and being a necromancer, not Sam Isha, you heading out of here? I heard that. Oh, that's D. Brown heading out. All right, Sweeney, we'll catch you on the next go-round. Appreciate you jumping in, my friend. And we got to get back to doing these pod spots again. I apologize, guys, but I'm going to get that back underway. Appreciate you guys jumping in. I'll get y'all on a free play. Because we got to get our pod wheel back up and running. But so Hordak, being ancient and sort of being around forever, to me, that sort of trumps Skeletor's power. It sort of, you know, it is a higher. And I've always regarded Hordak as a little bit more of a villain, I guess. And so one of my favorite depictions of Hordak, even though he's been around for ages, he is essential in the theft of, you know, Adora and the kidnapping of Adora and the shaping of Adora being the Horde captain. And then later on discovering who she is, her true identity, Hordak and Shadow Weaver hiding that from her. Very sinister stuff from Hordak pretty much throughout his whole existence. So if he's ancient and he's a being that's been around forever, and that's sort of explained also using his necromancy, using the, you know, the things that he hates, the sorcery that he hates, but in a combination of being able to use his technomancing and being able to use sorcery, he and his brother and his father had were granted almost immortal type life, a very long type of life. So that's keeping them alive. If we look at that part of the canon, we go back and we accept that as part of the story for Hordak and part of the backstory for Hordak. What's up, Manaconda? What's going on, dude? What you'll see is that Horde Prime is actually not Hordak's father. Some people do believe that. Hordak's father is Horde Lord, and that is Sephiroth Kerr. So Sephiroth Kerr was actually Hordak's father. Gave birth to two sons, Hector Kerr, and so he's old as hell. Yeah, so basically he's old as hell. Yeah. And what was the brother's name? Good Lord. Anilus, I think. I have to actually look that up because I cannot remember that. Let's see. It was over here. Anilus, I think, was his name. Yeah, Anilus Kerr. So, you had Horde Lord, Hector Kerr, and then Anilus Kerr. Anilus Kerr actually goes on to be Horde Prime. Horde Prime and Hector Kerr together killed their father, who was Horde Lord, Sephiroth Kerr, and in doing so, took over the Horde Empire. Anilus goes on to lead the Horde and be Horde Prime, and Hector Kerr is then sent out to do his own thing, sort of being subservient to his brother, but it paints a picture that these were immortal beings that were fighting for the control of the galaxy or control of all of the planets. Obviously, they were able to not necessarily move through time, but they were able to withstand the ages. And so in my mind, Hordak has sort of had a hand in everything, and I like the idea that he was around for the development of the Central Tower, because it adds something to the story with King Grayskull, and it just makes that whole story much more interesting. And so Alexander mentioned it just a minute ago, the way that he is represented in MYP, and we never actually truly got Hordak, but we were building towards it. But the way that he was represented in that series is probably my favorite, just in a sense that He is a being that is trapped, and he's trapped within the world of Despondos. And even from there, he is very aware and very much having a hand in the things that are happening, and just trying to get someone to release him from his cage. So I really think that particular, the way that Hordak was presented, he was presented as a very omnipotent kind of being, and that, man, the one thing you did not want to happen was to have Hordak come back. A little pause for the cause. It says in the book about the characters that Hordak and Zodak are brothers also. That's interesting. Is that in the compendium, Richard? I may have just missed it, but yeah, I would imagine that's probably listed under Zodak too. But real quick timeline, we're going to run through this. That's an interesting thing to look at. I bet time in Despondos is hyperbolic to time outside of it. Yeah, there's definitely something that would... the way that they talked about it was the technology and the sorcery combined together was what actually granted them unnaturally long lives. But for the timeline, so 83 Motu mini comics, 83 Golden books, it was pretty much the same. It did shed some light on the teacher-student relationship between Hordak and Skeletor. When the Horde invaded Etheria, they discovered a powerful mineral called Etheramite. A young Etherian man wished to learn its secrets, and Hordak took him under his wing. Ambitious, the man attempted to harness the Etheramite and was transformed into Skeletor. So, read you that to tell you this. Very odd that in this 83 depiction or 83 telling, these Motu Golden books of Hordak, they actually gave an origin story for Skeletor, and I don't think anybody really paid attention to it or really has caught it that much, because it's not something that's heavily touched upon even in this book. But if you look and listen to the way it's read, when the Horde invaded Etheria, they discovered a powerful mineral called Etheramite. A young Etherian man wished to learn its secrets, and Hordak took him under his wing. Now, we knew that Hordak had an apprentice named Skeletor, but what we did not know was that he was a young Etherian man wishing to learn its secrets. So, stating that Skeletor is from Etheria, not from some other dimension. It says there he attempted to harness the Etheramite and was transformed into Skeletor, who then betrayed his master and fled to Eternia with plans to conquer that world for himself. Thanks, Sam Asha. I appreciate that. Yeah, dude, find that and post it if you don't care. That's pretty awesome. Something very cool that I didn't even pick up when I was going through here. German audio plays and a World Motu annual, similar to other portrayals. Hordak's ability to transform his arm into various weapons and objects. Motu audio plays had a unique play on Hordak with his history. While visiting numerous worlds, Hordak befriended the wizard Glostafoss, who gave him a ring to call and control the demon Moduloc. I just thought it was very interesting that they pointed that out. Later, he and his Horde returned to Eternia in secret and rescued Skeletor from certain death. So, multiple times throughout the history of Hordak, we hear that Skeletor is Hordak's pupil and that Hordak has reached out to help Skeletor at various different times. Interesting that, of course, Skeletor, being the master of death, death incarnate, goes on to betray Hordak in probably my favorite, well, I wouldn't say favorite, second probably to MYP, but favorite depiction of Hordak, which is a little bit later in the DC Motu comics in 2012. I'll jump over that in just a second. But Filmation, the pop animated series, is what really set Hordak off. Of course, him being the main figure there, the main protagonist. Let's see. Early in his life, he was trained in sorcery by the Etherian magician Noah. He rejected magic in favor of science, and he led the Horde Empire's attempt to conquest of Eternia from his base of operations at Snake Mountain. Though the effort failed, Hordak managed to kidnap Princess Adora from the royal family and escape to Etheria. He left behind his favorite pupil, Skeletor. Hordak, alongside Shadow Weaver and Chakra, raised Adora as a member of the Evil Horde in the Fright Zone on Etheria. Now, know this, there are multiple Fright Zones. There's a Fright Zone in Etheria, there's one in Eternia. This is depicting a time prior to Adora's birth, obviously, and then as she is taken and him being banished there as well. It's interesting, that whole dynamic. I mean, I don't think there's probably a lot of stories that you tell kids. I know not nowadays, but especially back in the 80s where, you know, this was all about a evil person from another dimension coming through and kidnapping your baby, and they get to raise it as their own. So, you know, scary stuff, man. Scary stuff, guys, back in the 80s. Trivia, Prince Zed, Horde Prime's son, was referred to as Hordak's nephew, establishing that Horde Prime and Hordak were siblings. So there is the absolute definite, they are siblings, Horde Prime and Hordak. A lot of folks think that Horde Prime is actually Hordak's father. He's not. They both came from Horde Lord. 86, Marvel Star Comics. Thought it was very interesting too. It showed Hordak differently in a sense that he was the same in most all of the stories, but there actually was a story where he got amnesia, He-Man got amnesia, and they actually became friends and were working together until the two of them realized, you know, who they were, and then obviously couldn't go on with that. Hordak was in a position to destroy He-Man, did not, and it was sort of out of respect for He-Man. So, interesting there for the Star Motu, 86 Motu comics. The newspaper strips, and I don't know if you guys, if everybody's seen those, but the newspaper strips is an amazing book. It's absolutely huge. I am still not through this thing. It's very different. It's got a lot of stories and things in it that we never got, obviously, in the mini comics. This thing, just beautiful. They're only missing, like, just a few. They were finally able to run down all of these. So Penny Dreadful and Val doing a lot of work on this and trying to get this put together. So, Hordak in that, I think, is very interesting. And they do show a picture here, so I'll share it with you guys out of this book. But look there. I think that is an awesome look for Hordak, sort of the shrouded. You know, he has almost a Palpatine kind of look to him there. You don't want him to be frail or anything like that, but I think he looks really menacing there in that shrouded look. Portrayal of Hordak was consistent with his depiction in Filmation, but this is where Hordak spent some time in Eternia's distant past as the cloaked and hooded Tilgar. He attempted to mine the powerful mineral polydurate, which had been used to build Castle Grayskull, and transport it to Etheria, thus preventing the castle's construction. So, interestingly enough, we have another touch where Hordak, able to move through time, page 269 under the DC Motu comics. I must have just missed it, man. Let's see. Let's go over here to 269. See what we find out. I appreciate that, dude. Anytime you guys share the knowledge and share the love, please do. Because that's why we do this thing. That's why we get together and talk. Okay, so it's listed under Zodak. So that's pretty awesome. Okay, so at the play of Mr. Richard Denny, we're moving over to 269 in our compendium, DC Motu Comics. Once over a million strong, so this focuses on the Cosmic Enforcers. They engaged in a brutal war with the Horde for centuries. Let's see, it's going down. He bore witness to the total destruction of the Cosmic Enforcers as Hordak absorbed the souls of the dead. Zodak was referred to as Hordak's brother. This might be the reason why Zodak survived while the others died. He later became a mere observer of destiny. So it doesn't give us, you know, really a whole lot more to go off of other than the fact that it just says it, which we know is definitely the case, because there's a whole lot of that stuff with the Cosmic Enforcers and the Horde, which is actually tied back to this part here with Hordak. So let me kick back over here to Hordak. That's interesting, Denny. I appreciate you throwing it out there, man, because that's cool to look at as far as in the discussion that we're in. I think it's a cool concept that, you know, maybe one went one way and one went the other. I definitely don't think that would be a Nihilus curve, because that would be, you know, obviously we see Zodak as good. I think maybe that has to do with, was there a one-off? I think there was a one-off mini, The Origin of Hordak. I think I may have it. We'll throw that in a waffle if I do. That would be The Origin of Hordak comic, which is a very good issue. Thank you, Magnus. Yeah, so I think I do have that. If I do, we'll definitely give that away tomorrow night, too. But, yeah, I think it definitely went into that and sort of discussed that whole battle that's been going on between the Cosmic Enforcers and the Horde, and definitely mentioned what you just brought up. And then right here also brings it up in the DC Motu comics in the 2012 part. It says, while Hordak's first victim was his own father, so he actually took the head of his father. And that's the depiction in the DC, the 2012 Motu comics, man. It is very dark. It is a lot darker and grittier, that particular comic series, than anything else that we've ever gotten as far as Masters go. It's why I love it. I think it's, you know, they didn't do a lot of senseless killing of characters. There wasn't a lot of ridiculousness. The dialogue very much fit the characters. But I think that it was done really well. So that's one of my favorite kind of tellings there. And the way that Hordak is portrayed in that, man, oh my lord. Like, he is the way that I think MYP would have envisioned him to be. Just sort of this all-powerful being that is pretty much unstoppable. And once he's unleashed, it is just all hell will rain down upon the planet. So pause for the cause. Yeah, I mean, I do like that part of it being dark like that. So it says, in the DC 2012, it offered a version of Hordak's backstory with some significant deviation to the details. Millions of years old, Hordak murdered his own father, Horde Prime, took his skull as a grisly prize. With this mystic skull by his side, he consumed the souls of all but one. So it does mention it there, Denny, and I think that's important. I wonder if they would follow that into the possible movie. Dude, that would be amazing. I mean, the thing that always kind of gets me a little riled up about when we start talking about, well, man, they just need a good script. They need a good script. They need to write a good script. Guys, they've been writing a good script for a long time. The script is there, and the players of the game are there. All of the characters are there. You just need to decide which part of their story is really significant enough to be a part of the whole story, or of the piece of the story that you want to tell. And I think the Cosmic Enforcers, and we were just talking about this actually on another group that I'm a part of, and it's a fairly small group, and we just kind of kick around you know, different character discussions, and a discussion got started about Mighty Spector, and then beyond that discussion, that sort of led into a couple of different things with the different factions. I obviously was already thinking about talking about the Horde tonight, and yeah, I mean, I agree, AK. I just think that there's a lot of factors that are probably in the way of us getting what we would like to see. And maybe, you know, I think Motu fans are pretty hard to please. And I know that we're not going to please everybody, because Masters of the Universe is so large, there is a piece for everybody. And because of that, you're not going to be able to do it one certain way. And I think that was kind of a little bit of a failure in the classics bios of trying to tie everything together. I mean, sometimes we just don't need to tie everything together. And so, interestingly enough, I did want to talk about the classics bios, because that is where it does outline the fact he was the second son of Sepphoris Kerr, the Horde Lord. Hector Kerr studied both magic and technology with his father and his older brother, Anilus Kerr. Through a combination of both, the family made themselves and their servants nearly immortal. When the brothers assassinated their father, Anilus seized their throne as Horde Prime. Although submitting to his brother's authority, Hector plotted to eventually steal the throne for himself. It goes on to say, he recruited many warriors into his service and led them to Preternia in pursuit of heroes. So there we get a gauge of age. So if he is in Preternia with Hero, obviously pretty far back there, right? And in a failed attempt to steal the star seed from Eternia's core, he cast the spell of separation to break the world apart. Okay, it's a little tie-in with 2000X, or 2002, where in the Mike Young productions, we see the spell of separation, which ends up creating the light and dark hemispheres. And so, it's the classics bio trying to tie everything together. This forced Procrustes, guardian of the starseed, to physically hold the planet together, but the spell created Eternia's light and dark hemispheres. Hordak's forces fought in the Great Wars against King Grayskull, so again, we're gauging the time. He is somewhat immortal. And the Snake Men, until the armies formed a truce and built the Three Towers to share Eternia's magic. So, Hordak betrayed the others, and the conflict resumed in the first Ultimate Battleground, where Hordak ultimately killed Hero. So, it is very poignant to the fact that Hordak actually had a hand in creating the Great Towers, or in the Three Towers, before the Great Wars. Really don't, as far as that particular telling goes, it just goes on with what we already know, fusing Demo Man with Skeletor, or with Keldor to make Skeletor. Hordak scouts across Etheria, peaceful oasis amid the chaos of Despondos. He comes in, conquers Etheria. Now ruling from Etheria, he's built a new Fright Zone to oversee the invasion of Eternia. He will also set his attention to returning Horde World and overthrowing his brother. When the Three Towers rose from Subternia, Hordak attempted to steal the secrets of time travel from the Central Tower. Lacking the cosmic key to control the energy of Central Tower, his body was mutated, and he then becomes Buzzsaw Hordak. So, read you all that to tell you this, very much different from what they did in 2012 with that particular telling. Now, 2012 telling of Hordak and his origins and his destiny, so to speak, I like it so much better. And I don't know, I actually do like the idea of the conflict already existing between the Cosmic Enforcers and Hordak, because makes sense that they, you know, the scales have been tipped and they're totally out of whack. We need Zodak to step in and help, because the ever-present danger of Hordak is there. So with that said, the direction that it goes in is a little different, in a sense that there are ages, and the ages that are going on, we have the Age of Serpos, the Age of Horakoth, and the Age of Zor. Each of those being rotating through time and through Eternian time. And I like that concept, because it's an idea that good, evil, and neutrality all get their play, or they get their day in the sun, I think. So the idea being that, you know, as one age ends, another age has to begin. And so along with this idea was the coming of the Age of Horakoth, and Horakoth being the symbol for the Horde, for Hordak. The bat. And so Hordak, almost like a vampire bat, in this particular telling, he has been slain. His soul or spirit, much like we get the spirit of Hordak figure from classics, has been trapped and it has been unable to return to a physical presence because it has been locked by the heir of Grayskull, or by King Grayskull, basically. So now, in order to return, he needs the blood of Grayskull, or the heir of Grayskull, to return to a physical body. And unlocking that age, the key to that age, is Adam's blood. So, again, a very darker, grittier telling of things. And if you start it with the 2012 DC Comics and go all the way through Eternity War, Eternity War is just an amazing telling concerning the Age of Zor, the Age of Horkoth, Serpos. We see the death of a sorceress. We see the birth of a new sorceress. We see the birth of yet another sorceress, and a time being found, and Hordak forging a sword for himself during the Age of Horkoth. So very interesting stuff. And Hordak, obviously, if we go back and look at over everything that's ever been done, even though toy-wise or concept-wise, the idea of Hordak, I think, probably was a bit later. He's been there all along. He's been there from the beginning. He's been there before the Great Wars. He's been there throughout. So, Hordak, man, without a doubt, he's definitely one of the most prominent figures. I think everybody knows who Hordak is. But also one of the most important as far as conquest. I mean, we wouldn't have the struggle that we have if we didn't have Hordak. So, very cool. Just wanted to share that little character profile and rundown with you. Of course, tomorrow night, guys, we'll get in on the big guy himself. And, of course, we'll let some toys off the shelf. You guys know what we do. Oh, goodness. Almost died in front of you. There we go again. Hey, man. We'll do a little Hordak on the spin. So we'll talk about Hordak tomorrow night. We won't really talk about him. We'll just let him do what he do. And guys, I appreciate hanging with you. Thanks for coming over doing the podcast and hanging with me. And pause for the calls. And we'll see you on Thursday. Good night, y'all. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good night.